Welcome to The Sober Venture, a podcast that brings together inspiring entrepreneurs combining the worlds of recovery and business. My name is Will Bradwell, and I'll be your host. So pick up your favorite zero-proof beverage, turn up the volume, and let's get down to business.
Today I'm talking with Joseph Mitch of Revived Recovery and Step-by-Step Staffing. We start off a little bit with an introduction of what Sober Ventures is, and then get into Joseph's journey into entrepreneurship and recovery. Joseph discusses his battle with alcohol and substance abuse, and just how bad it had to get before he could get better. His story is very powerful and inspirational, and I think you're going to pull out a lot of positive message from what he's gone through. He's taken his experiences and turned them into a way to reach out to others and help those struggling to get into a healthier situation. Here's my discussion with Joseph.
Hello.
Hello, Joseph.
Yes, sir.
Hey, it's Will.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I am hanging in there.
Doing all right? That's good.
Yeah, nice I'm good. Sunday. I got my daughter this weekend, so always running around.
Oh, yeah. Keep hustling. That's good. That's good.
So what is this, actually?
So it's kind of like my sobriety project, I guess, that I've come up with the last couple months.
Okay.
I've been sober about a year and maybe 3 months now.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Congratulations.
Thank you. So about like 4 months ago, I was on Instagram kind of searching out different people, and I just kind of wanted to start posting my own kind of thoughts and my own pictures and kind of inspirational things. And I'd been listening to a lot of podcasts over the past year.
And okay.
I used to like own my own, like my parents' business. We used to like Tropical Fish. So I was always like into entrepreneurship growing up. And I did that after college for a little while. But now I got like a 9-to-5 job. So I'm doing that most of the time. But once I got sober, I noticed I had like a lot more extra energy and a lot more time to put into something.
Yes.
So I started getting interested in entrepreneurship again and like web development and seeing like different communities online for sobriety and stuff. And I saw that there wasn't really something for like sober entrepreneurs to like kind of come together and kind of have a community around.
That's funny you say that. That's exactly what I'm doing. And I have a nice little network of guys who are involved with me.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, it's a small world.
Yeah. It's one of those like, I don't know. I feel it's important to have people around you in the same kind of mindset, because I mean, getting sober, kind of lost track of like just kind of hanging out with a lot of my old friends. So you gotta have like something to fill the void in and have it be based in positivity and growth and that kind of thing. So I saw like different podcasts and like different other things for sobriety. So I'm like, oh, let me put something together just for like entrepreneurs that have like kind of felt the same thing and have gone along the same path. So I found you. I saw you were making all your different, I guess you like carve the stones in the different shapes.
Yes. It's funny. I work as a counselor intern at the same rehab that I actually went to. All right. And I was given lecture one day, and we're doing an outside lecture, and I picked up a stone, and I said, and this is how it started. It's actually pretty cool. I picked up a stone and I said, what does everybody see? And you were trying to describe this rock. And I said, well, I see an addict. And everybody said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, everything you described, you see on the outside, which is how everybody describes addicts, with what they see outside. I said, but I see something beautiful inside. And then I went home, and luckily enough, my girlfriend, she's a jeweler, so she has a rock polisher. So I polished a tooth. And the reason I polished a tooth was to show strength and like, you know, and I brought this rock back and everybody was amazed that this was the rock. I said, so this is what this is the beauty and the strength that is inside all of us. And that's really how it started. And then I started just making them for people and coworkers. And then my girlfriend was like, well, if you're going to use my equipment, she's like, you may want to start selling them. So I was like, no one's going to buy these. And then I got this guy, a friend of mine, to do my website. And it's actually, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not retiring anytime soon, but it's a great hobby. It's fun to do, and it's starting to catch on, actually.
Right on. That's cool. I've seen all the different things you posted up. I'm like, that's I see you have like the different themes around them too. You have like the hearts and like the reverse teardrop also.
The reverse teardrop is the one I want. It's my own personal kind of like my addiction awareness campaign. I plan on starting a nonprofit foundation within the next year or so. I want to start a foundation for children who have lost either one or both parents to addiction, and I wanted the reverse teardrop to be my symbol. So basically what I'm doing is I'm starting this website basically to get my name and my logo out there just to be identified with recovery. And then from there, when I start the nonprofit foundation, they're going to be like, oh, it's the rock guy or however they want to identify me. And yeah, the whole reverse teardrop thing is just because we've all shed enough tears in addiction, both addicts, family members, loved ones. So the more awareness, the more we come together, the more we can kind of reverse the tears. And that's kind of where that came from.
Cool. I like that. That's a good message and a good way to spread it too, to get something tangible in people's hands that they can see and they can visualize and externalize. It makes it more real to people too.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And that's kind of like I do necklaces, and I also do I just posted it today, as a matter of fact. A lot of my friends, they want like what are they called? Like gratitude stones, like you rub them while they're in your pocket or whatever, you know, thinking stones, something along that lines. So a lot of my friends now want these made. They want me to make them just so they can like stick them in their purse or stick them in their pocket or something like that and just pull them out like without wearing them. So I'm going to start doing that too.
Mentioned you just kind of started with the rocks after giving your talk there. Did you have like kind of an entrepreneur background before that? Like, were you always interested in business? Like, how did you kind of get
Oh,
into it?
well, oh man, my backstory. I used to run a speed strength and conditioning school for kids. I did that for about 4 years. I worked in affiliation with a company called the Hit Doctor. It's a baseball academy. And basically, I was living a very good life. I was making a lot of money, more money than I was qualified to make at the time, you know, because I didn't really have schooling behind me. I was really good at what I did. And my mom actually got diagnosed with a terminal breast cancer. And that was pretty much my downfall. So my mom got diagnosed with this terminal breast cancer. I don't want to say I didn't have a problem with drugs prior to that, because I did. And I don't like the term functioning addict. But I had, you know, I was hooked on, I don't even want to say hooked. I used very regularly painkillers, cocaine, Vicodin, Oxys, Perks, Demerol. I used that all on a regular basis, and I was still functioning. I still worked. I still paid my bills. I still, you know, but then when mom got diagnosed, I started drinking. And I started drinking. I learned real quick that I had a very high tolerance. So drinking the amount that I was drinking, and doing that with everything else I was using, that's when I lost my job. I lost my credibility. I lost my daughter. You know, I lost everything. It was I refer to it as kind of like a mudslide. And when the drinking increased, the drugs increased, and then the cocaine went from cocaine to crack. I shot alcohol, believe it or not. You know, I did not discriminate against any dry substance or alcoholic beverage. And let's see, then where did it really get bad? I lost my mother in 07. I lost my grandmother in 08. I lost my grandfather in 09, and then I lost my best friend, who I referred to as my sister, on my birthday in 2010. And then from 2010 to 2012 was pretty much a blackout. I wasn't allowed to see my daughter. Well, let's see. My daughter was born in 06, so I had missed probably 6 years of her life before I got clean, because I didn't get clean until 2013. I don't know. What else do you need there?
Well, I know that's a heavy couple of years, those back to
Yes.
back to back, and and you're just doing whatever you could to think that it's gonna help get you through it. So how did you turn it around from there?
How did I turn around? Well, I had, all right, I had this kind of, I've never really, I've done a few of these, but I never really did my backstory. I had three suicide attempts, obviously unsuccessful. I spent a lot of time in crisis. I spent quite a few times getting arrested and brought right to crisis. And the truth is, man, is I was terrified. I was scared to live. But I was terrified to die, and I was too much of a, I was too afraid to kill myself. I was. So the suicide attempts were kind of, I don't want to say they were half-hearted, but they weren't. I didn't pull a trigger, let's put it that way. And I was in crisis, and I was all strapped down, and I just remember for the first time thinking to myself, I don't want to die. And I never thought that before because I always just kind of wanted my addiction to kill me. I did. I wasn't allowed to see my daughter. I didn't have anybody left in my life. And the only reason I was able to live at all was because when my mom passed away, she had left me the house and it was paid for, so I didn't have a mortgage. And that was really my only saving grace. So I'm laying in crisis. It was in Kennedy Crisis Center. And I just remember saying to myself, I don't want to die. And it was the first time I had said that. So, I was in Kennedy for about, I think 3.5, 4 days. And I went home and I just had the tremors really bad and I couldn't walk. And I was laying on the couch and we tried to get me, a rehab. We called all these rehabs and with my insurance at the time, it was difficult. So, Maryville, actually, I don't know if you can use their name or not. That's actually where I work. Maryville called me back and they said, be here by 11 o'clock. So at 10 o'clock, I downed a liter of vodka and off to rehab I went. And I was there for 44 days. And when I left, that was it. I knew I was either going to die or I was going to die trying. And that started my new life, January 19, 2013.
Yeah, that's an intense process there to I'm glad that you were able to get to a good place there and I'm glad that there's good facilities out there and you got to the right one.
Well, you know what? I think, and I really believe this, I really believe that when you're ready to recover, you can recover anywhere. I think the counseling is great. I think the establishments are great. But you can have a state-of-the-art facility with the highest qualified counselors, there are, but if you in your mind don't want to stop using, then you're not going to. And I mean that's really it. I hate using the expression you can lead a horse, you can lead a horse to water, but that horse is it, you're only going to drink if you're thirsty, and
You have to be
that's
open
what
to it.
that yeah, I mean that's what recovery is. You can't force anyone to do it. So
It has to be the right time and the right circumstance. And if you hadn't had that realization that you want to live, that you want to go on, then no matter
yes.
what anybody was telling you how to move on, how to live, if you didn't want to yet, then there's nothing they could do. That you could be
You're
released and
absolutely right.
nothing would change.
You're absolutely right. And I was fortunate. See, I got clean when I was 36 years old, and I'm lucky that I lived that long because looking back, I did my first line of cocaine when I was 18 years old. I think that when you reach a certain age, honestly, you just get tired of living that way. And I think that's what happened to me is I had lost everything. I lost all my friends. I had nothing. And I always had people like, I don't want to say looking out for me, but life was easy for me. It was like people took care of me when I needed it. I had friends, and I lost all that. So when I went to rehab, it wasn't like go to rehab and you'll get your family back. Go to rehab and you'll get your money back. Go to rehab and you'll get your daughter back. Like, I had nothing waiting for me. And the realization of growing up, it terrified me. But that's what I had to do to recover. I had to learn how to stand on my own 2 feet. And, I had to learn how to man up, basically. And that's, You know, I still to this day, I don't have it. You know, I'm still learning. You know, the only thing I'm an expert on is my own recovery. And, you know, that's, I tell everybody that.
Well, that's a good thing to, and it's always practice. It's never ending. That's one thing I'm learning, is that there's so much more to learn. There's so many more experiences that are possible in the world once you kind of like open up your eyes to the different experiences that are possible. You can see what you can learn.
That's huge too, because I know I'm very involved. I'm very involved in working in a rehab. I see all different kinds of issues come in, whether it be drugs, whether it be alcohol, whether it be homeless, whether it be from prison. And, you know, I'm also very active in the rooms of recovery. And I see a lot of opinions being thrown out there. And one of the main things I try to focus on, because I get paid to do lecture. I do a 2-hour lecture every day that I work. And I stress recovery. I don't promote a fellowship. I don't promote a religion. I promote recovery and honesty. And once you become honest about your recovery, then you decide what fellowship you go into. Then you decide what your higher power is. Then you decide what church you go to, if any at all. But you have to believe in yourself first. You have to believe that you truly want to recover, because anybody can lie. Anybody can get in front of a room and say whatever they want to say to anybody. But having that self-confidence to make a decision for yourself is what I feel is most important for addicts. Because the bottom line, the truth, Will, is that as much as we've let other people down in our life, and we have, we've let all addicts, anybody with any sort of substance abuse problem has let people down. But those people that we've hurt, they get to walk away from us, whether it be for a minute, for an hour, or forever. They get to say, I'm done with you, I need a break. But we have to live with ourselves, and we have to live with knowing that we've hurt people over and over again, and that's hard. So part of recovery is being able to trust yourself again to make the decisions that you need to be able to stand on your own 2 feet. And I think self-confidence is a huge, huge factor in recovering from any substance abuse.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Self-confidence is one of those things that I felt like I never really had until I started drinking. And then, of course, it was just a mask. It was just all fake. It wasn't real. And so taking that away kind of left this void. Like, wait, how am I supposed to be confident now? How am I supposed to talk to people now? Mm-hmm. And having to kind of learn. I got sober at like age 30. And I'd been drinking since I was 18. Once I went away to school, I was always really shy. And so going out, going to like my first party and meeting other people and actually having conversation and being able to like open up to people never would have happened before, until I was like, oh, well, this is why everybody drinks. This is why people do all these different drugs. It just makes like the whole little walls just kind of fall down. But really, it's building them up at the same time, because then you can't do that yourself. And you have to have that in order to make anything happen. So once I got sober for the whole first year, I kind of stayed to myself. I never got into any AA programs or NA programs. I just, luckily I have a good support system in my wife and in her family. And so I have sober people all around me. So I had never really had to reach out and go somewhere else and try talking with people. But now almost a year on, I decided I need to kind of get out there and meet some more people in order to like kind of grow my own self-confidence out and to bring some value to other people that are going through the same thing. Because it's one of the most important things to me when I was starting out, was just listening to other people's stories and listening to podcasts and listening to how other people got through it and how they learned to develop, like you said, their own self-confidence in order to live life without the influence of everything else, which is everywhere, which no matter where you go out to dinner, you go out to watch a sporting event, everybody's always drunk all around you. And that seems like the only way to do it. So having that like self-confidence and the self-esteem that was always just like kind of pushed down so much just by filling in the void with alcohol has been huge for me, having to learn how to do that.
Yes.
So.
Yes, you're absolutely right. But who are we trying to impress? That, like, and that's what I had to come to the realization of. Like, I used to try to impress this girl, or to try to impress this guy, or whatever, and I was giving off this false impression of who I was because I had no identity. Basically, what I did was I lost sight of who I was, and I relied on this substance for people to like me. I didn't know who I was. And the more I drank and the more I used, the more I forgot who I was. Then I had to remember who I was for different type of people. And then the lying came in, and then the stealing came in, and then the cheating came in, because I couldn't be faithful to anybody, because when you're under the influence of anything, you can't make a rational decision. And it was just a snowball effect. So I get that. I completely understand.
Hmm. Yeah. You know? So how did you move on into that? Like, how did you... Like, what kind of skills did you learn at the rehab and through your journey from there?
Well, in the rehab, they made me community leader. I was always all right. It's actually funny that you followed up with that question, because that whole self-confidence thing and the drinking, and that's what gave me my personality. Well, so I thought. So when I went to rehab, I was very timid, and I was very nervous, and I felt very alone. So it was very comforting right away, like when I started going to the meetings, like, wow, like, even though this guy is this race, or this guy is this religion, or this guy has this problem, like, we all seem to, our low points, our bottoms all seem to be the same. So there was comfort. There was a lot of familiarity in the rooms. So then they made me community leader. And being community leader, I had to open meetings every morning, and then I had to introduce the speakers, and I got very comfortable speaking in front of rooms. And then we formed an alumni group at the rehab, because, you know, we had AA come in, we had NA come in. But what I wanted to do was what I spoke of earlier, is I wanted to start a recovery group. Like, forget what fellowship, forget what higher power you have. Like, I just wanted guys to know that you can recover if you want, and how you decide to is how you decide to. So that's pretty much what I did. We started this recovery group, the alumni group, we called it. We called it the alumni group at the rehab. And then once I hit my 2-year sobriety mark, then I was able to work for the rehab. So they hired me right away as a counselor intern. And now I go out and I speak on behalf of Maryville. I'm kind of like the United Way rep, the United Way, you know, the foundation. They get people to donate and everything. So whenever United Way has an event, I go out there and I speak on behalf of Maryville. So I got used to speaking in front of large crowds, and I got used to talking. So that really came about from rehab. That was a skill set that I never knew I had, until they kind of said, okay, get in front of the room and lead the meeting. So that was pretty cool. And that helps me a lot today, actually.
Yeah. That's always a lot of people's number one fear, is just speaking and being kind of vulnerable in that kind of way. And it's scary, especially at first. Like, I'm hiding behind a microphone. I've never really given any public speeches or really done anything like that, but this is like my kind of baby steps into that world, because, like you say, it's you can't really make an impact without speaking to people. You need to be out there in order to make that impact. That
you're absolutely right.
Yeah, very cool.
You're absolutely right, and your story can help one person, and I think that's a big part. People in recovery today, especially public speakers and everything, they really think that they want to save everybody, which is great. But the most important person is that one person that can identify with your story, that one person that you can help, you know, that one person that can walk up to you at the meeting and say, like, I can relate to your story because of this. Like, you can't save the world at once, and every day when I go to work, if I tell the guys this, if I, you know, if I can just get one of you through one day, through one, you know, one temptation, if something I say can help one of you, then I did my job for that day. So.
Right on. So let's talk a little bit more about, what you're doing with your revived recovery group.
Okay.
Like, so, do you have any other kind of insights along like the way of kind of building your community? Like anything you've learned along the way that might help other people kind of develop those kind of skills, or is it kind of like just practice, and put yourself out there a little more and more?
Just practice and practice, honestly. That's I come up with an idea. Are you talking about just the jewelry aspect or the whole?
Kind of the whole thing, but yeah, the jewelry and speaking and kind of learning to put
Well,
yourself out there a little more.
I'll tell you something that the Revived Recovery it did for me was the name and the recognition locally. What it's done is I've affiliated myself with a company called Step by Step Staffing, and a good friend of mine, his name's Mike Garcia. You can actually find him on Instagram. I called him before I talked to you, and I said, "Do you mind if I tell him about, what we're doing?" We actually just started a staffing company, and what we're going to do is we're going to affiliate and align ourselves with recovery houses and IOPs and even drug court. And there's temp agencies for like felons, and there's, temp agencies to, help people, but we're trying to make it more recovery oriented. Like, we want to specialize in actually finding recovering addicts jobs and help getting families back together. So it's we literally just started it, as a matter of fact. We just got bonded. We just got our LLC. He's actually the president, and he has named me vice president. So that's where our that's where our plans are taking us in this next year.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, that's really cool. I know
Yeah.
that's scary for somebody that, especially like somebody with a DUI on their record or anything else that's kind of led them into rehab or into other situations like that. It can be difficult just getting out there and getting a new job and like kind of getting over that hurdle. So having an advocate for that process, that's going to be huge. That's going to be much appreciated.
We're trying, because my plan is actually I want to open up recovery houses this year. That's my own personal next venture. Revived Recovery wants to open up some recovery houses, because one of the biggest problems I see is these guys come into the rehab and they're there for their 14, 19, 25, or 30 days, whatever the case may be, depending on their funding. And a lot of them, that breaks my heart, they really want to get clean. They want to, but the problem is they're going right back to the same house. They're going back to the same house where their mom and dad are using, or their wife is using, or their brothers are using, and they don't have anywhere to go. So my plan was to do the recovery house, and then when Mike approached me, he actually heard me speak, and he's a counselor at the rehab that I work with, and he was in on one of my lectures one time, and we just started talking, and we became great friends. And he approached me about the step-by-step staffing. So we're trying to figure out a way to monopolize everything. And what I mean by that is we're trying to get people jobs, and then we're trying to get people who live in my recovery houses jobs, and then we're trying to set up like a cleaning company so we can actually employ the people who are living in the houses and get them jobs through our company. Like, we have a plan in place to where we can do a lot of good for the recovery community. For anybody who's really serious about getting their life back together, we really want to be able to provide jobs, housing, transportation if need be. Like, because we see it every day. And as great as my rehab was for me, it's not a five-star hotel. It's not like these guys going to Florida, and they have a pool downstairs and they get to walk on the beach. Like, it's rough, and it's humbling, and it's dirty, and
Yeah, and
it's
it's not a
depressing.
forever place either. Like you need to
Right.
have
You're
some place to move
exactly.
on to and to move back to. If you can't go back to your house, if that's not a good place for recovery, you need to be able to go someplace so that you can get that level up in your life, because otherwise, I know it's so easy to just fall back in old habits,
Yes.
when that's all that's around you and that's all you see. you kind of mimic that, and you can't release it. So,
and it's comforting. It is on some level. You know, what's familiar to you is what's normal to you. It is. So if you have 40 days clean, okay, now you realize you have a problem. Now you realize what you need to do to stop using, you know, but then you go back to the exact same environment, you know, the first sign of stress, the first sign of trouble, the first fight, the first thing that goes wrong, you're going right back to it because that's what's always been there, you know? So you really need to put yourself in a position to take it off the table, make it not a possibility. You know, like if you know you have a bottle of whiskey in the counter, you know, and you know every time you get in a fight with your husband or wife, you grab that bottle of whiskey. I don't care how long you were in rehab for. You come home and you get into a fight. The first thing you're going to do is look at that counter and know what's behind it.
Yeah.
You know, so you need to eliminate that. And if being out of that house for 6 months, 3 months or a year is the best thing for you to do, then that's what you have to do. But a lot of guys don't have that option. You know, that's the problem.
Yeah, that's right. So where are you located at?
I'm in New Jersey. I'm in Marlton, New Jersey, South Jersey.
Oh, right on. Okay.
How about yourself? Where are you calling from?
I'm down in Miami, Florida.
Are you really?
Yep.
Wow.
Down in the sunny tropical heat.
Wow. Well, maybe we can do this interview in person one day, and I'll fly down there.
There you go. It's a crazy place to be. I'll say that. It's a fun town, beautiful weather, but man, the people are nuts. The traffic is crazy, but I'm sure in New Jersey you got plenty of that too.
Oh yes, yeah. There's a lot of jokes about Jersey drivers.
Uh-huh. A lot of them come down to Miami too. My dad's from Jersey.
Oh, is he really? What part?
He's from like South Jersey. I forget exactly where, but he moved down in the 70s with my mom. So.
Okay, I'm from Marlton. I'm in South Jersey. It's right, you know.
Okay.
We're about an hour away from the beaches.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
Right on. So, well, that's cool. And so you're like kind of working locally up there, kind of starting out like with like different rehabs in that area, or do you see like kind of growing?
Well,
beyond
the rehab I work at is about 45 minutes away from me. Again, it's Maryville. But the staffing agency, we're going to localize it to the same area. You know, we kind of got like a map with a big circle drawn on it of everybody we're trying to hit. Our goal is to expand to Philadelphia by 2018. It's going to be tough to reach that, but we're going to try. We're going to try. It's right now the thing is, the problem is where we are, like we're local, so we see all the towns coming to us. Example, like I don't know how bad the drug problem is in Philly. I can only assume it's bad, but right now where we are, it's horrible. We have Vineland, we have Millville, we have Atlantic City. The drug problem in those areas are absolutely awful. They really are. So that we're kind of like, when we look out the window, that's what we see. You know, so we're just trying to help the people, you know, in our area right now to the best of our ability, and then branch on. You know, hopefully it takes off, and we can help people all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, you get a good testing ground there to see how things work, and once people see that it works, then I mean, the whole country needs it. The whole world probably needs it, really. So that's good work that you're doing, and starting out right there is. That's a place to see, the place you're familiar with, the place you know, and work on it from there.
You know, it's one of those things that more people need to talk about, because I really think education is huge. And again, all families are different, but you need to know, you at least need to not have this horrible stigma about addiction or about alcoholism, because... And don't get me wrong, I hope that addiction never comes knocking on anybody's door. But if it does, you kind of have to know what to do with it. And that's my whole thing. Like if you notice on Instagram or wherever, everything I post, I always have addiction awareness. Everything. because I just want people to be familiar with it. Because I blindsided my family, to be honest with you. And my mom's sister, my only living relative, my aunt, still to this day will not speak to me because of how bad I was. You know, and that's hard. That's very hard. Because she doesn't understand. I don't want to speak for her, but I don't think she's too familiar with addiction and the process. You know, a lot of people just think, oh, put down that drink, put down that drug, and get your life back together. And it's not that simple. There is a process, and there's a great deal of work involved, you know. And, you know, I tell my guys every day, anybody who tells you recovery is easy is lying to you. You know, it's worth it, but it's not easy. No one's going to hand it to you. You still have to work for it.
Yep.
So...
Awesome. So what does what does a day in your life look like now? Like, do you have any kind of routines that you go through? Any habits that kind of help you through everything?
Structure is actually huge for me. Which is something I learned, you know, in recovery. When I have too much time on my hands, you know, that's when you think too. And don't get me wrong, I'm in a much different place now than I was 4 years ago when I first got clean. But when I first got clean, I had to stay busy all the time. I had to wake up at a certain time. I had to do this. You know, when I first got clean, I was lucky because I had to go to parenting classes. I had to go to IOP, you know, intense outpatient therapy. I had to go to anger management classes. I had to go to meetings. So I had a lot on my plate, which really kept me focused and humbled at the same time because I didn't like to be told what I had to do. So in doing all these things, you know, I learned that things need to get done and then you feel good about them. You feel good about accomplishing things. So then I kind of adopted that whole, like, let me wake up and make my bed. Let me, you know, when I eat breakfast, let me clean my dish. Let me accomplish five things before I even leave the house. You know, and you know, I kind of do like small term goals, medium goals, and like long term goals. Okay. Like, okay, real quick, an example of a small-term goal is, you know, getting up, making my bed, putting my clothes in the hamper. I know it sounds simple, but you'd be surprised. A lot of addicts don't do that ever. A medium goal, I'll go buy a book, and I'll give myself 2 weeks to read it. That way, you know, I lose that instant gratification where I have to finish anything immediately. Mm-hmm. Like, I work for it. I'll read a chapter a night. You know, I'll read a half hour a day whenever I get time. And then I kind of see the end in sight, like the reward that's coming. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm working towards it. And then my long-term goals, like example, my long-term goal when I got clean was to come back and be a counselor at that rehab. And that was something I had to work for every day for 2 years to be able to accomplish. Mm-hmm. You know, now my long-term goals are a little bigger because I've developed the confidence to make them bigger over time. I want to do the recovery houses, you know, I wanted the temp agency. I want to be able to walk my daughter down the aisle. You know, these are things that I have to remain clean for in order to do, which kind of why is honestly why I started Revive Recovery, because right now I have my reputation back and I am credible and people do respect what I say, which is cool. You know, I get emails and calls by a lot of people, like, just like, this is cool what you're doing, or what do you think about this, or my husband has this problem, or I think my wife's an addict. So people kind of respect me now, which is a whole new feeling for me, because, and I joke with people, like, if you would have known me 5 years ago, you would not be calling me now. But everything I involve myself in now, the Revive Recovery, the step-by-step staffing, the recovery houses, the... You still there?
Yep.
I just heard this really, really loud noise.
Oh, right.
But everything I surround myself with, it kind of, if I pick up again, I lose it all. So everything I'm doing, you know, it keeps me clean every day. It gives me focus. That's the structure that I need every day. I wake up, I bring my daughter to school every day. I come home, I make some jewelry. I go to work. You know, I work 12 and a half hour shifts. Full time for me is 3 days a week. You know, when I'm not there, I'm in the process now of writing a proposal because I'm trying to get a funding source for Narcan, which I'm going to present to the mayor of Evesham. Like, Everything I'm basically doing right now just revolves around recovery. So if I pick up, I don't have anything tomorrow. So structure, setting goals, accomplishing them, these are things that I do every day.
Awesome. Yeah, having that structure, having a plan for what you're going to do each day definitely helps. Not having to like guess, okay, it's 6 o'clock. What am I going to do today? Am I going to have dinner, or maybe I have another option? You just kind of take that away, and it makes the whole process a lot easier to focus on those goals and actually be able to accomplish things and see things happen.
You're right, and I'm going to tell you a really funny story because this is recent. I used to play video games, and I never read. I never did any. Like I would just veg in front of the TV for hours. So this new video game came out a few months ago, the new wrestling game, and I used to be a huge wrestling fan. Well, I bought this game. I went out and I spent the $65 or $70 on this new game. I put it in the other night, and after about 5 minutes of playing it, I felt like I was wasting time. I felt like I could have been doing something more productive. And I turned it off and I picked up a book and started reading. And my girlfriend started cracking up laughing at me because she was like, "You just stop playing video games to read a book." And I thought about it for a second, and that's change. Like 5, 6 years ago, I would have played that video game for 8 hours and done nothing, not answered my phone, not saw my daughter, not work, nothing. But after 5 minutes, I got disappointed in myself. I thought like, this isn't going to better my life. There's nothing that I'm going to get from this, and I put it down and I picked up a book and just started reading. And it's just change. It's change. You have to break old habits, because the bottom line, man, is I was an asshole before the drugs or the drinking. That just kind of magnified the problem. I had to change everything about myself. I had to change my outlook on life. I had to change the way I treated people. I had to change the way my expectations of people. I had to change everything. So I had to basically just rebuild myself from the bottom,
Yeah,
if that
you
makes sense.
relearn. You gotta relearn everything. I remember, like, I had tried getting sober like a couple years back. I was like, okay, I'll just be sober for the month of October. I'll take a month off. I'd just been like partying a lot recently, and kind of had the inclination that, well, it's not really getting me anywhere. It's not like I'm not really making any new friends. I'm not really being actually more social. I'm just kind of faking it, and it's not really accomplishing anything for me. So let me just take a break for a month and see what happens. And so it was like a couple weeks in, and I was like, okay, let me just play a video game. So I put on Grand Theft Auto, and I was like, okay, all right, well, this just isn't as much fun.
Yes, you're
And so I kind of realized at that point, like, the things that, like, I would drink so other things wouldn't be as boring as they actually are. And having that realization, it could go two ways, and I think I went the wrong direction at that point.
Yes.
The right point was to think, if what I'm doing is so boring, why do it at all? And include drinking on top of it, which is unproductive and not leading me anywhere else. Instead of
You're
thinking,
absolutely right.
well, everything's boring, I'm just going to drink to make everything that much better. Instead of thinking, oh, wait, maybe something else is possible. Maybe I can do, maybe there's enough, a different option. Because after 2 weeks, I didn't make it the whole month. I went over to a friend's house. We were watching a basketball game. They had a couple beers, and I was like, you know what? Everything else is boring, so let me just go after this. And then it was another couple years before I finally got actually sober for real. So I had that thought, and I'm like, oh, if only I had thought that sooner and actually stuck
Yes.
with it.
Well, that's I lost a lot of time in my life. And you like the last 4 years I have memories. I can think of things, I can feel emotions. Like I can't even really tell you what it was like when my daughter was born, because of the mental condition I was in. But I can tell you about taking my daughter to the park last week and how much fun we had at the daughter dance. Like these are things that I can actually feel now, when all my drinking and all my drug use prevented me from feeling. So the last 4 years, I actually have memories that the last 20, I don't. You know, and I always joke, like, because I just turned 40 in December. So I always joke and I say that, you know, they say that 40s are your new 20s, which is great because I don't remember anything from my 20s. So, you know, I got to keep my eyes open this time around. But, man, the one thing about addiction on any level, especially drug and alcohol addiction, is, you know, it didn't, like, rob me of my childhood. It kind of, like, trapped me in it. I was, like, an eternal infant. And it feels good now. It feels good to take positive steps and, you know, to be able to make decisions and just be able to, you know, be a man. Because I think one of the most important things in life is, you know, especially for the people that we've hurt with our addiction, I think being able to show them that, not that we don't love them, but that we don't need them. And what I mean by that is we don't need them for, hey, can you help me pay my phone bill? Can you, you know, help me pay my car insurance? Like, can, you know, like, to be able to show the people that we love that we can stand on our own 2 feet, you know, and I think that's truly a wonderful gift that we can give our families, you know, is like to show them that we're independent, that we're strong, that we can do it on our own. I think that's a truly wonderful, remarkable gift that recovery has given me, you know, personally. I think that's important.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Having taking personal responsibility for your life and not kind of blaming anything else on anyone else that they didn't give you the right things, just being kind of accountable for everything you have going on. And it's easy to wash it away when you're drinking and doing everything else.
Sure.
That you don't want to be responsible. You're kind of hiding away from all that. And like you said,
yes.
Yeah, being trapped in childhood is so right on. You just kind of get stuck in that mindset and and not feeling like powerful, like you can actually make a difference and make an impact at all. So that's definitely smart. So let's see, do you have any, because you mentioned reading, do you have like any kind of books that you've read that have like made an impact on you throughout the time?
Oh wow. I mean I read a lot. Anything in particular? I like different views. I like different opinions. No, to answer your question, no. I really, like no particular author or anything like that.
Okay.
I just read. Somebody will be like, this book helped me, or this is a good one, and then I picked up. I'll tell you, the first book I read, actually, I tell people this and they look at me like their eyes go crazy. I read Diary of a Drug Fiend.
Okay.
That was the first book other than AA. I read the big book of AA and I read the NA book in rehab. And when I got out, I read Diary of a Drug Fiend because I heard this whole conspiracy that this book was written prior to the book, to the big book. It was written like 17 years, I believe, prior to the big book. And I wanted to read it. And I actually related to it very well, considering it was written in the 20s. I think it was written in 1923, if I'm not mistaken. I related to just parts of the books and feelings that were trying to come through and just the pain of addiction. It was very, very powerful. Besides that, I read... just whatever crosses in front of me that can motivate me, can keep me focused, can open my eyes up to someone else's different perspective. I'm very open-minded in recovery. I am. I don't care what your beliefs are. I believe that as long as you stay clean and as long as you're being true to your recovery, you know, I don't care how you do it. I really don't. Like, I don't think you need to hit a meeting a night if you don't want to, you know, or you could hit 3 meetings a day if you want to. Like, whatever, I'm a firm believer in whatever works for you.
Right on. Yeah, right on. I've never heard of that book before. But yeah, getting just different perspectives gives a, just kind of opens the mind to different ways of thinking. You can just take little bits here and there and see from other people's experiences. And apply it, and like you said, no matter how many people you talk to, sometimes one thing you say might just connect with one other person, and by having a diverse set of reading materials and just kind of constantly getting a good stream of just something else besides just like own self-talk, I could see that helping.
Well, I think your brain's a muscle, and what I mean, but well, your brain is kind of, it is a muscle. And, in order to stay focused, let's put it this way. If you would have asked me to do this interview 4 years ago when I got clean and then compared it to today, it's two completely different perspectives. I believe that you have to keep using your brain. You have to read, you have to learn, you have to use it. Because for so long I was tunnel visioned. It was always my way, my way, my way. And if you don't agree with me, you're wrong. And I don't argue with people anymore. There's no point. Here's a funny one. I went to IOP and they used to let me run the IOP classes. And after I got done one day, my counselor came up to me and he said, you're really passionate about recovery. And I was like, yeah. And at this point, I think I only had like 60 or 70 days clean because I was in rehab for 44 days. So he's like, all right. He's like, well, you sound like an asshole. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, you're not going to convince anybody that you're right by arguing with them and telling them that they're wrong. And it made no sense to me because I didn't see myself like that. And he said, okay, who's your favorite football team? And I said, the 49ers. And he said, well, my favorite football team's the Eagles. He said, so let's say you and I go into a room and we have stats and videos and highlights and we debate for an hour. He said, are you going to leave that room being an Eagles fan? And I said, no. He said, well, I'm not going to leave being a 49ers fan. He said, so what the hell did we just do? And that really clicked in my head. Like, that really made sense to me because that's kind of the way I lived my life. Like, I had to prove something to everybody. But to me, especially in recovery, like I kind of look at opinions and beliefs like your partner in life, like your lover, like they're yours. You don't need to share them. You don't need to convince them. I don't need to tell anybody they're wrong, and I also don't need to tell anybody I'm right. Like my life now belongs to me now. The decisions I make, as long as they're in the best interest of me and my family, it's what I believe. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion, and it kind of just opened my eyes to taking a step back, being open-minded and not really forcing anything, just allowing different things to come to me as an individual.
Right on. Very cool. I like that. So, let's see, in wrapping up,
okay.
Let's say like, what advice would you give somebody that's like maybe they're not even sober yet? What advice would you give somebody that might still be in addiction that you might think might help them kind of start to see what other options they might have?
Wow, you mean like somebody coming to me for help?
Yeah, maybe, or like somebody that might be listening to this that's just, they're not sure if they might have a problem. Like what kind of, you have anything kind of?
Well, the thing with addiction, and I speak, in my own personal experience, I love throwing myself under the bus because nobody can really tell me I'm wrong, is I felt very trapped. I felt very trapped. I felt alone. And I never thought, life could get any better. And all I did was make excuses for why my life was the way it was. Like if I got arrested, it was somebody else's fault. If everything that happened, I blame somebody else. And what I tell people is I think about the happiest moment in your life at that moment. And then think about the worst day in your life at that moment. You didn't think at that time that the saddest thing happened. You never thought you'd be able to recover from it. You thought your life was over. You thought how devastating this was at that moment. And then the reverse is think about the happiest day in your life. Think about how happy and how ecstatic you were and how you wanted to live in that moment forever. Because we all had the happiest and we all had the saddest time. Now think of those moments today. We're not as happy as we were then. We're not as depressed as we were then. Things change. time changes. Not that time heals all wounds, but time allows you to accept things, deal with things, take a step back, change perspective. What I try to tell people is that they're not bound by yesterday. They're not bound by who they are. They're not bound by what they did. If they're not happy with the decision that they made, if they're not happy, the way people see them, they can change tomorrow. They can change who they are. They can change their appearance. They can change their beliefs. They can change anything about themselves. I think so many times in addiction, we get caught up with how people perceive us because that's contagious. It's how we perceive ourselves sometimes. Because when we don't really have an identity, and when we're reaching out for people for help, if people perceive us as an addict, if people perceive us as a scumbag or a thief or however people see us, it's kind of how we see ourselves. So I guess, to answer your question, what would I tell somebody trapped in addiction, is if they're not happy with who they were yesterday, you can change it tomorrow. You're not bound by anything, I look at life very simple today. Yesterday prepared me for today, so I better pay attention because tomorrow's coming soon, and that's kind of how I still do things today. If I don't like something I did yesterday, if I snapped at my daughter, if I handled something wrong, like I remember the feeling, I remember, what it did to me, and I try to change it if the situation presents itself again. Change is possible. I don't know. I don't know. How was that?
That's good. Yeah, just realizing that what your past doesn't mean that that's what your future is going to be. That just because you're trapped in the moment now and you think that that's the only way, that there's other ways around it. So
Yes.
that's a
Yes,
good way to keep it in mind. I like that.
you're absolutely right.
Cool. Well, I think that's pretty good. I love your journey, and you're doing great things. I'm really impressed. Like, 'cause I've only seen just like a bit of your like the jewelry and the rocks you've worked on, and I saw a little bit about the step by step thing that you posted. So.
Well, we're literally, when I say we're just starting that, like we just got bonded, we just got our LLC. We have a temporary website up right now. We're starting it, it's
Yeah,
and my
we're
plan
getting
is to be
started.
able to do that and then just be able to do the jewelry for fun and enjoy it because, I try to live as stress-free as possible. And people look at me like, you're crazy. But you know what? I've been through hell. I have, and that's not a pat on the back. That's not a, oh, look at me. My addiction was, it was severe. It was bad. Like I didn't really get into amounts or anything like that, but it was a,
It was
it
a
wasn't a
battle.
happy time for me at all. So I just want to relax and have fun, and I really want to help people to not make the same mistakes that I made. I guess that's I
That's
lost a
awesome.
lot. I lost a wife through my addiction, and I almost lost my daughter, and my wife's remarried. I have no idea where she is. She never wants to speak to me again, and that's part of the journey. And if I can prevent somebody from feeling the pain that I felt, then that's what I'm going to do. And if I can do that through a piece of jewelry or getting somebody a job or finding somebody a place to live or just being an ear on the phone, then that's what I'm going to do.
Thanks for listening to my discussion with Joseph. I hope you found some value in his story and what he aims to do with his ventures in sobriety. It goes to show that no matter how far gone things may get, and you may feel like hope is all spent, you can still recover and take those experiences and turn them into something powerful to help and inspire others. Again, be sure to check out all of what Joseph has going on at revivedrecovery.com and at stepbystepstaffing.co. Thanks for listening.